Good evening. Rosie Dow here, and I'm looking forward to an information-packed evening tonight with Terry Whalen, discussing how platform is linked to your book proposal. I'd like to welcome you to the preview seminar series for Spread the Word 2008, where you will get to meet and interact with our expert faculty and start to implement their valuable techniques before you even get to the event. This is the fifth in the series, and Spread the Word 2008 takes place in Atlanta on October 10 and 11. Spread the Word 2008 is a training conference for anyone with a message you'd like to spread to the world. Book authors and writers would especially benefit from the conference. Whether you have a book in print, in a manuscript, or just in your heart, this training conference is for you. And we're doing more than holding classes. All conference attendees will have access to two Q&A sessions after the conference is over. This is in the following weeks. And all conference attendees will be invited to a private Facebook group where the training and networking will continue to go on and on. What we're doing is creating a family here. We're not just holding some classes. This is your chance to get connected to other people in your field for cross-promotion, encouragement, and help. Spread the Word 2008 is empowering writers to expand your vision and your scope. You can learn more about the speakers and the classes that will be offered by clicking on the link under at the bottom of the page. It says print a conference flyer, and there will be a one-sheet condensed version where you can click on that button and then just see a short version of it all. And then the big red button says, tell me more about the conference, and that is going into the website where you can take a look at all the speakers and what they're going to be talking about and more about the luxury hotel where we're going to be meeting. It's the Crown Plaza Hotel, 5 minutes from the Atlanta airport with shuttle service every 20 minutes. No taxi rides for this conference. I can't stand those taxi rides, so I made sure I got a place that was close enough to have a shuttle bus every 20 minutes, and it's free. Well, tonight, Terry Whalen is our featured trainer. Terry Whalen is a professional writer who has written more than 60 books, and during the last 15 years, he has been published in more than 50 magazines. As a journalist, Terry specializes in inspirational writing as well as topics for the general marketplace. Terry worked as an acquisitions editor for 5 years, so he's been on both sides of the desk, and that makes him a unique and powerful resource. And now he's also an agent, and he's marketing proposals continuously. Welcome, Terry.
Thanks, Rosie. Great to be here with you.
Well, I want to say I really do feel privileged to have you on the faculty for Spread the Word 2008, because you were the first one to get me interested in Internet marketing. I don't know if you know that or not, but you were the first one.
No, I didn't really know that. So.
You sent me an invitation to Virtual Book Tour Systems.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I clicked on that button, and here I am. You don't know how powerful just a little click that says send when you send out those those messages.
Yeah, I don't have any idea who I've influenced or done anything to over the years. I'm just kind of out there. So.
Yeah.
Great.
Well, when I clicked that button, I learned that the way to actually make a living at what we're doing is by using the same information again and again and again. In our old world of paper and ink, everything has to be a totally new creation, but that is not so on the Internet. Well, tonight there are going to be some exciting giveaways, and some of them are on the webcast page where people are listening there on the Internet, and you can take a look at those. And we're going to be talking a little bit, just a minute, about the faculty. We're going to have Terry, of course, and then Lori Steffen and Jeff Wark, who teach repurposing, 216 ways to take the same content and make new products. Judith Shervin and Jim Snikowski of Bridging Heart and Marketing are going to be there. Linda Goldfarb, who is a syndicated radio talk show host, a wonderful woman. And then Danny Gusby and Heidi Nabert are going to be teaching podcasting. And Heidi is also an expert in book covers, and she's going to be doing some training about book covers. Mike Stewart does video, and he's going to teach how to create and post video on the Internet. And then, of course, Timothy and Carla Williams of Wine Press Publishing are going to be there talking about different forms of self-publishing and how they work. Allison Bodke about personal branding. Karen Power is going to talk about becoming a nationwide speaker. And then Kathy Perkins teaches blogging, and she is the WordPress wizard and a terrific lady. And then, of course, Jeff Herring, who teaches about online articles, how to market and to create online articles in as little as 20 minutes. Now, In our world, where you're writing for a magazine, a 20-minute article, no way. But on the Internet, that is the standard. We've got a lot of fun stuff going on in Atlanta in October. Interactive sessions with attendees coming on stage to get a business makeover. One-on-one sessions with the trainers, and we're going to be talking about that a little later. And so much more. I promise you, this is going to be a totally different experience than you've ever had before. We are not going to send you home with a pile of notes that you can just put on your shelf and forget about. We are going to empower you at this event and then follow up with you so you can take control of your income and your career instead of remaining a passive part of the process. So we've got a lot of questions, Terry, and are you ready to go?
I'm ready to go.
Okay, we've got a lot of questions, so we're going to have to roll because usually 15, 20 questions, but, you know, I think we have about double that tonight. So let's go on here. Amy says, how do you start from zero to build a platform?
Well, that's a good question. I guess the key for building a platform would be figure out what kind of platform you're going to build and figure out what your main topic is. Dan Pointer in his book talks about how you can probably only really take on about three different niches in your life. So you have to figure out what those three things really are that you're going to emphasize, write about, write online, write magazine articles, write books about, speak about, all those kinds of things. And so you have to figure out what topic you want to jump into, whether you want to jump into something very crowded, like a parenting-related topic, for example. Publishers are still looking for parenting books. I mean, I don't know if you realize, but there's still a continual need for those books. They're actively looking for them. Of course, they're looking for something different, something fresh that hasn't been done before. And so that's your challenge, to build that platform, build that audience in that category that you've chosen. So you have to pick a topic would be the first thing, and then one of the fastest ways to do it would be to build an e-zine list online and be regularly communicating with those people through an online newsletter, whether you started at Yahoo or Constant Contact or whatever it is in the world it is that you, or AWeber, whatever it is you're using, but consistently writing to people and delivering valuable content to them. Most of us start out with just a few people on our list, but you keep working, keep expanding it, building that list until you have a bunch of people out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, somehow word does get around. I've experienced that myself. And your
it
list
does.
Starts to build.
And publishers used to build platforms for people, but they really don't do that anymore. They're looking for, that's the word that people are constantly talking about in the publishing community. When I approach editors, they're asking whether that person has a platform or not. Fiction, nonfiction, it doesn't really matter. Fiction is different because it really does emphasize the story. The story has to be excellent and has to be a compelling page-turning type story through your telling there of the story. But if you have five manuscripts sitting on your desk as an acquisitions editor or an agent, which all of us do. I've got reams of stuff sitting around here that people have sent me. And which one are you going to take? You going to take the one where the guy's got an e-zine list that has 10,000 names on it, like one of my clients, or somebody that has nothing? Which is going to shine for you? It's pretty obvious where you're going to gravitate.
Right, right. Those contacts are so important. Carol asked, how do I narrow my interests and concerns into the best idea for a platform?
Well, that's a good question. I think part of what you have to do there is sort of trial and error, I guess, is what I'd say, how you narrow your interest. You know, where do people gravitate as you write? What kind of feedback are you getting about the materials that you put out there? Are people saying, yeah, it's really something I needed, or do you need to narrow it? I mean, tighter and tighter niches can can really work. It just depends on which niche you're going to build, I guess.
It has to be something you're passionate about.
Something you're passionate about, yeah, absolutely. Something's going to sustain you. That's why, you know, people start these blogs, and then after about a month, they give it up. People wonder how in the heck I keep my blog going. I have almost 900 entries in that thing. And part of what it is I'm very passionate about writing, publishing, teaching authors about that whole area of the market. I find books that I refer to. I find magazine articles. I read The New Yorker, all kinds of things that I push people toward in my blog, and so I keep writing that thing. You've got to find a topic like that that you're passionate about, that you want to continually write about. And if people aren't getting my blog updates, that's free. They should go by there and do that. TheWritingLife.ws is where they can do that, and that'll take you to my blog, and that'll be a great thing. In the right-hand column there, I've got a way that you can sign up and get my blog updates on email. There's almost 400 people that get my updates every time I send those out.
Mm-hmm.
I started out with just a few people, like most people, but then it's grown till it's you know, almost 400 people.
Right, right. The key is to having such good content, which you do, Terry. Your blog and your newsletter are just rich with a lot of good information. And that's great. I mean, that's where it's at, to deliver information that people need.
And it's not hard to do. I mean, even on the e-zine, people think, oh, my goodness, I've got to write all this stuff. No, you don't. There are, you know, there's e-zine articles. There's a lot of sites out there with a lot of free information and free content. And all you have to do is step back and say, okay, I'm going to be the magazine editor. And, you know, wear that hat, wear that title, even if you have 10 people on your e-zine list when you start. And just start piecing it together and putting it together and getting it out there. Being consistent about it is as important, and delivering good stuff is a whole part of what this is about.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Let's see. How do I best frame my platform mail list, strategic partnerships, online promotion plan in a nonfiction book proposal relating to current mental health issues? Framing the platform?
How do you frame the platform? I'm not
really
sure what they're getting at there. I guess in your proposal, if you have a mental health kind of issue thing, you have to look at the market and figure out who would be compatible with you, kind of thing, would be somebody that would, not really a competitor, you don't look at them like that, but you look at people that you could join hands with and work with. So, for example, if it's let's say it's you know, cancer research or something like that, is there, with the Susan B. Coleman Foundation, the little pink ribbons that are everywhere, is there a way that you could work with those people and through a joint venture raise money for cancer and also raise your own visibility through that process? I think that's the type of joint ventures that you're looking for, where it's a win-win. It's a win for you in that, you know, you get more people for your list or something, but it's also a win for that other person that you're partnering with. So you have to look for those kinds of situations, and they're really all over the place.
Right.
I mean, people are building amazing platforms out there. I don't know if are you familiar with the I blogged about it not too long ago. Peter Shankman has Help a Reporter Out. I mean, here's a guy in New York that knew a bunch of journalists, and all these journalists were calling him and were saying, okay, where do I find the source for this? Where do I find the source for this? And so he started this little website called helpareporterout.com. That's where it is. And you can go over there and sign up on his list. So if you have a story idea that you want, or maybe you have a product or something that you're promoting or a book that you've done or something that you're speaking on, get on his list, because three times a day this guy sends out queries, and they're from, good grief, they're from USA Today and CNN and, you know, Good Housekeeping, as well as all different kinds of major and minor places. And if you're a journalist and you're looking for good sources of stuff, you can also fill out a form and he'll add you in, your query in, so you can get queries from people. This guy, in just a matter of maybe 6 months or so, has built a list. I think he went over 30,000 names here just in the last day or two. And, I mean, it's amazing what he's done. It was a unique idea. He's got a little simple website there, helpareporterout.com. You can see what Peter's doing. But this kind of thing is being done continually all over the place. You just have to jump in with both feet and start doing it.
Right. Dr. David says, do I need to commit to a strong pre-purchase of my own books since my speaking events are natural book sale venues? Pre-purchase of their own books. I've heard of that through some publishing. I guess that's...
Yeah,
that's
sometimes they call it a buyback, an author buyback, and it's... Mm-hmm. I mean, it's great if you can, if you have the capital, and publishers love authors that are going to step up and buy, you know, 3,000 or 4,000 copies of their book, or even 1,000 copies of your book would be terrific. But, you know, it all depends on what you can negotiate with the publisher. Usually the more, with traditional publishers, the more books you're going to buy, the less expensive those books are. There's usually a sliding scale. It depends on your contract and what you've negotiated. When you negotiate your contract, and, you know, really do get good advice when you put together these book contracts, because it's amazing what you can do if you get good counsel when you work on these things. But after you've signed them, you're stuck with whatever's there. So mm-hmm. publishers are, yeah, they're looking for authors that will support their book with a buyback, but it's not, I'd say it's not a necessity.
Okay, very good. I've heard of that, but I never really understood how that worked.
Well, and special sales is huge too, it can be a part of your platform, really. Special sale is where you go to a corporation or a nonprofit and sell them a quantity of your books. Now, you may not close that sale, but I'd say 70 or 80% of those kinds of opportunities, those are opened up by the author. And so as an author, you have to be thinking about those kinds of opportunities. I don't know if maybe Rosie is familiar with Brendan Burchard. Brendan has sold millions of dollars of his books to corporations and to nonprofits. And he wrote a novel called Life's Golden Ticket, I think is what it is. It came out from Harper San Francisco. And it's a great little novel, but he's joined hands with partners like Toyota and Walmart and places like that. And there are ways to do that and think outside of the box and really be able to raise your visibility. So if you don't have a platform, maybe you want to hook on to somebody else's platform out there, and that's a way to do it, is through corporate sponsorships and learning about that angle of the book business.
Going corporate is excellent, because look at the vast number of books you could move just in one fell swoop.
Well, and these published or these corporations and nonprofits really are looking for people, the right kind of project, naturally, but they have money to spend. So just imagine if you had a $100,000 promotional budget from X corporation, that's the way you shape your proposal and get it out there. And what would you do if you had that? What kind of speaking opportunities would it turn up for you? What kind of book sales would it do? You just really need to dream big about your thing and actively go for it. because publishers aren't going to do it for you. They're looking for the author to come along and have those kinds of ideas, that kind of vision. What kind of vision do you really have for your book? It's got to be much more than just getting published. I mean, there were 411,000 new books published last year. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you think that your typical Walmart has between 8 and, or not Walmart, your typical Borders or Barnes & Nobles has between 8 and 10,000 books.
Wow.
I mean, it's ridiculous how much stuff is out there and how little of it is actually in the stores.
Mm. Right, right. I loved what you said just a minute ago, where you have to think big and then go for it. Those two things are just so essential for success in this realm we're talking about tonight.
Well, I've seen these authors, Rosie, over and over. I mean, there'll be a book that I'll acquire for a publisher, and you know, we'll get out there with the book, and then 6 months later they'll come back to me with their royalty statement and they'll say, "What happened here?" And well, nothing happened because they didn't do anything, you know,
mm-hmm.
or maybe what they did wasn't effective. So you have to figure out what your strategy is, what's any old strategy, what's an effective strategy that's actually going to sell books. I mean, people are raving about these blog tours out there and all that stuff. I haven't seen one lick of evidence from anybody that a blog tour sells books. Sure, it may raise exposure, it may give you some visibility, but where really the rubber meets the road for the publishers is if it's selling books or not. And
mm-hmm.
that's the difference between like a blog tour and the virtual book tour kind of thing that you and I have been trained to do.
Mhm. Mhm. Right. Right. And there's more to it even than that. Selling books is wonderful and we want to do that too, but to really actually dig in there and get the information, repurpose it, use it to create training programs and other things where you can actually start to make an income and create a career instead of just waiting for your 6 months royalty check. You'll have a monthly income off of that. That's so doable, and that's what this Spread the Word conference is all about, equipping people to take that information and create an entire career out of what they've already written, which is beautiful. What they've already written, not new stuff, but the same thing they've already got out there.
Yes, you're just going to be disappointed if you just focus on the book angle, because that's part of it, but that's only one piece of it.
Right. Lynn asked, how does platform pertain to the author who already has several traditionally published books out there?
Well, it's great if you have several traditionally published books. Publisher's going to want to know how they've done. What kind of sales figures can you point to? And the reality is a lot of, whether it's fiction or nonfiction, a lot of those sales numbers are pretty modest. You know, people don't like to hear this, but, you know, 95% or 90-95% of nonfiction books never earn back their advance. And the reality is that advance money that you get for that book might be all that that book will ever earn, unless you're out actively doing something to get it out into the marketplace, much more active than any publisher will ever do for me. I mean, authors complain to me all the time, whether it's a large publisher or a small publisher. I mean, it's terrific that you've had a book or two published, but that is not enough by any means to get a book, to get your next book deal.
Terry, can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, I just hit a button. I thought, did I mute myself?
No, you're still
okay.
There, Rosie. You're still there.
Okay, great. Okay, here's another really great question. Dinah said, what if you do have a platform, but you don't know how to get started in other areas other than your own community? And I was just wondering if you could speak to that about branching out from your platform.
You're thinking of expanding more to a national kind of kind of circuit? Is that where the question
Well, what I took from it was, maybe I'm wrong. We could talk about that too, but I was thinking about maybe another topic that she's interested in or some other genre or field that she's interested in. How advisable is it to move away from what you've created into something else, some other area?
That's possible, but there again, you have to start fresh if you do that. So you have to, I think you have to figure out, like I was mentioning before, you have to figure out what those two or three or four niches really are for you. Those topics that you love, you're passionate about, you're gonna talk about over and over, and not. You may be tired of those and want to go on to something else. That's okay too. But that's a choice that you're making. If you change, that's a conscious choice. And I'd encourage you just to go with that area where you're already building a little interest and stay with that if at all possible.
Right. To continue to build and build and build instead
of. If it has a big enough audience, I mean some. Sometimes people have chosen something, you know, their universe is so small, there's like, you know, 1,000 people in it, and when they sell to all those people, that's it, you know. So maybe they've chosen too small. But normally, if you've chosen an area of the market, I would just encourage you to stick in there and keep touching that audience however you can.
Right. Well, I'm going to put you on the spot now. Steve said, what is a platform? Can you give it to me in 5 words or less?
A platform really is your visibility, your connection to the marketplace is what a platform is in the simplest terms. Mm-hmm. How are you going to be able to attract readers to your material? I mean, I've mentioned several times before in my writings, Debbie Maycomber is a friend of mine, writes romance novels. Romance is the biggest category of fiction. No matter what you think about romance novels, they sell like crazy. Debbie wrote her first romance novel on a rented typewriter on her kitchen table. And today, I think she has 65 million romance novels in print.
Wow.
She's on the New York Times list, all that kind of stuff. Now, if you go by DebbieMaycomber.com, I think it's fascinating because on her guest book, she doesn't just want your first name and your email address. She wants to know where you shop for your books, where is that store, what's the address of that store, what's the manager's name. She collects a lot of data on her website. And the crazy thing is she uses that stuff. Recently, Debbie went on a 20-city tour, and anybody that was within 20 miles of the different bookstores that she went to, she sent a postcard. I got one. She came here to Phoenix. I happened to be traveling when she was here, when she came through here. But she has mob scenes at her book signings because I read here recently, she has 100,000 names on her database. And she emails them, she sends them actual physical mail. She works that list all the time. That's one of the reasons she's as successful as she is, because of all those people that love her and love her stuff. And she continues to write great books, too. You have to do that as well.
Sure, you have to deliver to your reader. Kathy said,
she's a shining example of that kind of thing.
Yes. Kathy said, is there a minimum level of exposure that a publisher is looking for?
A minimum level. Well, yeah. I mean, there's, you know, if you put in your proposal that you've, you got 500 people on your e-zine list, that doesn't do too much, you know, especially when you think that some of these online groups that you and I belong to have 500 or 600 people that are on those lists alone. So 500 people is like kind of like a drop in the bucket, you know, comparatively. The people that I know in the internet marketing community that are making, you know, substantial amounts of money have big lists. So they have 40, 50,000 people on their list that they're regularly sending to. And that's the kind of connection that you need to have. None of us will get there right away, but you can grow that list and keep adding to it all the time.
Mm-hmm. Right. We're going to be talking about ways to grow a list when we get to Atlanta, because Jeff Herring has got some terrific, terrific information about how to naturally grow a list of people who are interested in your topic and responsive to what you're doing. And anyway, that list building is one of the main points of making a success out of your writing, out of your internet information business, because if you don't have people to market to, what's going to happen? Not much. So that's a good point there.
Well, but publishers, like, I guess the bigger, back to this question here, the bigger the numbers, the better that you can put in those spots. And you know, people are always asking me, well, if I self-published my book, is that a negative? It's not a negative if it, but the question the publisher is going to want to know is, has that book sold? How's it done? You know, what are you doing to move books? How are you selling books? And if you've only sold, you know, 400 or 500 copies of your book, that doesn't do a whole lot for the publisher, because they're looking for much bigger numbers than that.
Right. How important is social media to platform? Wow, that is a great question. Social media, Facebook, LinkedIn.
Social media is great. I mean, there again, you're connecting with your audience. You're actively doing something that's going to help build your recognition, your visibility in the marketplace. Social media is great. I mean, I follow Guy Kawasaki, for example, the Apple evangelist on Twitter. I mean, Guy has over 18,000 people that follow him.
Mm-hmm.
So, man, when he Twitters, you know, it goes out to a bunch of folks out there. So that's a powerful tool. You have to be judicious about how you use your time and how much time you spend on the social media things. You can spend a gobs of time on Facebook and getting the coolest Facebook site and all that kind of thing. So you have to be judicious about how you do that and the way that you Twitter and all that kind of stuff. But it's a great way of building your audience, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Right, and while we're at it, what's your Twitter name, Terry?
Terry Whalen.
Wow. Yeah, Terry Whalen, all
real profound.
Lowercase and...
Real profound, yeah.
Yeah, but that's the way you brand yourself. It's your name. And my Twitter name is Rosie Dow with the number 2, the numeral 2 after it, Rosie Dow 2. I don't know why they put the 2 on there, but when I signed up, they put a 2. No, I live with it.
Maybe there were other Rosie Dows.
I have my doubts about that. I've never run across another one. There's no 2 of me. You have to admit that.
Okay, yeah, that's right. You're unique.
Yes, each one of us is. Okay, Catherine says, I have blogs and a website, but no traffic. Do you have any solution for that?
Well, who are you telling about it? I guess is what I'd ask. What are you doing to promote your blog and get the word out about it and your website? Yeah, I mean, it's a common problem if you're not in the search engines, if you're not... doing Google ads, pay-per-click ads, that's a way to drive traffic. Look at all those different kinds of things. Are you talking about your website in your signature line of the emails that you send out? What are you doing to really get out there and promote your site? That's what it is. If you build it and tell people about it, they'll come. But if you don't tell people, and if you don't promote, then nothing happens.
Mm.
I mean, you probably heard this saying that, you know, P.T. Barnum said that if you don't promote, the worst thing happens. Nothing.
True.
And it's really true that if you don't tell people about it, then that's the results you'll get.
Mm-hmm. Kathy Perkins, the WordPress wizard, she's got so many ideas about how to promote your blog and how to drive traffic, and so does Jeff Herring. Kathy's a latecomer. She just got on the list of speakers. Do you know Kathy, Terry?
I know of her, and I've heard a couple of her teleseminars, but no, I've never met her. No.
Never met her? Yeah, she's a great lady and very knowledgeable. She was talking about all the things you can do with the blogging, which is and monetizing it, too, not just driving traffic, but selling things from your blog. Excellent material.
That's terrific.
Okay. This one here I had to kind of Jay says, I have a column for a coaching newsletter that has a subscription list of 12,000 readers. Now, this is not his own list. He is, like, involved in some group that has, you know, puts out these newsletters.
Right.
Would it help his publishing chances to mention that he has a book that is looking for a publisher in his newsletter?
No, I don't think I'd do it there particularly. I guess what I would encourage him to do is if he has a column in a publication that goes out to 12,000 people, that's pretty healthy. But if it's not his list, then he needs to figure out a way of getting those people to give him that information. So what is it that he has that he can pull together and have a free giveaway in his bio, if it's an electronic newsletter, if it's a printed newsletter? I'd encourage him to buy a URL and point to a way that he can give away something where if somebody enters their first name and their email address, they can get that information. Like, for example, I just created this one, this list of agents that I have now that has more than 400 literary agents, their names, their addresses, their phone numbers, their email addresses. People want that. And so they can get it from me for free. They go to www.terrylinks.com/agents. And if you go to that page, it's www.terrylinks.com/agents. If you go to that page, you'll see that, you know, you need to give your first name and email address, and then you get the list right away. Mm. And that's a way of getting around that. In other words, if it's somebody else controls your list, you have to figure out what tool or what way that you can do in order to be able to capture that information for somebody else. And there's a lot of simple, really, things that are out there. I mean, look at the ebook that we're giving away on this call, Rosie, Platform Building Ideas for Every Author. I mean, basically this ebook is a series of blog ideas that I have written in my Writing Life blog. And what I did, I took there's a way online that I found that I can't remember it off the top of my head, but I found a guy that was selling Word templates that were pre-designed in Microsoft Word, and I think I bought them for $20 or $30, I think, from this guy. And they're all different kinds. They're really cool stuff. They're all already done. And so all you have to do is basically pour in your information, and there you go. I fixed it up a little bit, as you can see, for this Platform Building Ideas for Every Author book. But that was a pre-designed template that I used for that. I mean, it wasn't complicated. I mean, I don't claim to be any great Shakes designer or anything, but this information is all here now. It's all the links are live. You can click on it. You can go to a lot of stuff, and you can learn a lot of information just in this 31-page ebook that I put together.
Mhm. Right. Anything to entice people to come across, and you can even do that in your print with your print mailing list. Put something in there go to this link and get your free whatever, and then people will come in online and they'll be opting into your online list, and that's terrific when you have them on both sides of the issue there, on both sides of the line. So there are a lot of different ways to get people over into another list from one list. That was really good. What is a single element of a platform most attractive to a publisher?
I guess the single element that's most attractive would be the size of your platform, and whether it's focused, I guess, and the correlation between that platform and the topic that you're pitching to the publisher. So, in other words, I have an author that is pitching a Christian living kind of book, but yet her other books and her platform, essentially, that she's built has been in the elementary education market. So see what I mean? There's kind of a disconnect there with the proposal that she's put together, which is a great proposal, but this person has no platform really in that particular arena to do a Christian living book. At least they haven't shown it to me yet for me to buy on with it. And so there has to be a cohesive pitch and a cohesive connection between your list, your visibility in the marketplace, and the idea that you're pitching. Both of those things have to sort of gel together.
Right. Kevin asked, if you have a book aimed at preteen readers, should you focus your platform on the parents or on the kids?
What a great question.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it's the parents that buy the book, so you want them to be on board, but you also want those preteens to really be there as well. I don't know. I'd probably reach for both is probably what I would do. I would have a newsletter for the parents about how they can help their teens be better readers and how they can get them into the subject area of your preteen book. And then also one targeted for the preteens. I'd sort of do both, I think.
Mhm. Right. That is excellent. If you can convince the parents it's wholesome and the kids it's fun, you got a winner.
Well, yeah, and it's the parents that have the capital that they're going to spend on the book and the material. So you got to have them on board. That's for sure.
Right. Right. If they're not approving, nothing's going to happen. So. They have to be, on with it, and that's excellent. Excellent point.
I don't know if you saw the 39 Clues book that's just out that Scholastic has been promoting pretty heavily. You know, they're promoting this like it's going to be the next follow-up to Harry Potter. I have no idea if it is or not, but it was interesting to me to see all the add-ons that they have. I mean, they have game cards, and they have games, and they have videos, and all clues in these books. And all different kinds of things that they're rolling out with this. It's just a very interesting multimedia kind of phenomenon. I was looking at it the other night when I was in Barnes & Noble. So, I mean, this kind of thing is happening all around us. You just have to be aware of it and see how in the world you can hook your train to it.
Right, right. We were talking this last week about Robert Kiyosaki and the Rich Dad, Poor Dad books.
Yes.
Wow. The marketing that surrounds that entire, it's an empire now.
Oh,
it's a
huge empire, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, he's got a game.
Well, and last summer I saw him at Book Expo. I didn't see him. I saw his wife and his sister. He's even got a Buddhist monk for a sister, and they're bringing out a book, the brother and sister are bringing out a book this fall, I think, related to that. So, yeah, no, it's a huge machinery that's going on there.
Sure. With everything that's available today to everybody, just from being on the Internet and also the fact that, you know, what you can do with technology today, the sky's the limit. It's just really your imagination and your dedication that's the only limiting factors. Well, we're just about halfway through the questions, Terry, and... Oh, I dropped my phone. Okay.
We're halfway through, and we got 15 minutes left. Huh?
I think we're going to go just a little bit over tonight, but not much. Our faculty at Spread the Word 2008 covers a wide range of experience, and we're approaching this from a service perspective, not just trying for sales. You're going to hear us talking about heart, about helping others, about giving of yourself and reaching out. This is going to be a life-changing event for a lot of people because, remember, I said we are not just teaching. We are creating a family where you are going to be part of the group to network, to help each other, encouragement, follow up, teleseminars that you're going to have access to. You're going to be plugging yourself into the empowerment that we are going to be creating here for our fellow writers, because I am just so passionate about giving the writer back the power of his information and the ability to get it out to the people who need it the most. And I'm hearing a lot of talk these days about recession, money's tight, and there's a fear that's kind of hovering over just about everything you talk about today. Even the news today had all this stuff on it. But this is a new age, and our economy is shifting, and the Internet is a big part of the solution financially for so many of us. Why do you think that doing the same things again and again are going to change anything for you? I'm here to equip you and move you into this new realm. You only need two things to get started. You need a passion for your topic. Do you have enough passion for your topic to talk about it nonstop for the next 5 years? If you do, you have every reason to move ahead. And the second thing, you just need a commitment to yourself and to your calling that this is what you should do. If you have those two things, do not let fear stop you from moving forward, because this is the answer for you. And I am speaking from experience. I'm speaking with conviction because I know this is the answer. And if that is touching a chord in your heart, then you need to get on board and come into the family and let us help you make this a reality for you in your life, to help your family, to help you to reach more people with your message that need to hear it. There are people out there waiting to be transformed by what you have to offer. And why wait another day to see that happen? Okay, let's talk about the giveaways. We've got some really good stuff going on here. The first 10 people to register will spend time with Terry at the conference, just you and Terry at a table, talking about your book proposal and getting his input on how to make it better, how to make it more likely to get a sale. He will give you his expertise, his undivided attention, and you will have the power that he can lend to what you are doing there by his great insight into the market. And then for the second giveaway, you're going to get a one-on-one session with me, Rosie Dow, to talk about your information and how you could move it along with a system that will make you a profit like you've never seen with royalties. If you are published, if you're not published, it will still move you into the realm of creating a career around your message, around your information, because it's my job to take an author from the book to six figures quickly and easily. So you'll have 30 minutes with me talking about how to do just that. That's two, but there's a third one. Linda Goldfarb is a syndicated radio talk show host, and she has volunteered to hold free videotaped interviews for some special guests that you can use for online promotion. So you would talk with her in an interview format about what you're doing. It would be videotaped by a professional videographer, and you would have that videotaped interview in a studio situation to take home with you for your promotion. That is the third one, and that is a biggie. If you click on the big red button at the bottom of the you'll go into the conference website. At the bottom of the page on the conference website, there are two buttons. One is for registering alone, and one is for registering with a friend. Now, there's a payment plan in place on both of those, and you can make two payments, and so for just a fraction of it, you could lock yourself in tonight and get your time with Terry, get your time with me, get your interview, get you in line to get the interview scheduled, and she's giving 10. Linda Goldfarb is giving 10, and we're going to pick those 10 people at random from the people who come to the conference. We're doing things a little differently at this conference because I understand the value of having a mentor, someone to show you the way. Our speakers are very busy people. Terry Whelan is so busy you could not schedule a time to come in off the street and sit down with him to discuss your book proposal and get his input. He just doesn't have time for that. But you will have that opportunity while you're in Atlanta in October to sit down with him, and this is something that will benefit you tremendously. So
people
you need to ask yourself a question. Yes? What
did
you say?
People are trying all the time. They call me up. They want me to have coffee with them, or they want to take
mm-hmm.
me to lunch. And I'm like, I can't.
Yeah. Yeah,
we'll be doing it in Atlanta. That's great.
Yeah, there's just one Terry Whelan. There's not 10 that you could appropriate. It would be nice. So you need to ask yourself this question. What will it cost me if I pass up this opportunity? Will my book proposal get passed over because I missed this chance to interact with Terry Whelan in this unique opportunity? Okay, Terry, great information, and we have a few more questions. If you're ready, let's get back to it.
I'm ready.
Okay. How do I take my platform to the next level? That was from
what,
Gene.
What level is it at, I guess, is the question.
Is there like a middle road, a medium road, and a high road? Is there a difference?
Boy, I don't know. I mean, everybody that I know that has a platform is constantly growing their platform, no matter where they are in the food chain. I mean, even Debbie Maycomer that I mentioned earlier had, you know, a year or two ago, she had 70,000 people on her list. Today she has over 100. So, I mean, everybody is working at it all the time to try to get the biggest possible audience out there. And so I don't think it matters whether you're starting out or whether you're in the middle or whether you've got a large platform, that you're going to be constantly trying to figure out how to grow that. That's the way I look at it.
Right. It's a constant process. I always say if you feed your list, it'll feed you. You have to keep feeding it.
Yeah, you can't not send out to them. You know, you've got to be sending out on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I probably don't do that enough, you know, chastising myself. But people, you know, people give me a lot of great feedback when I do send out to it. So that's good.
Mm-hmm. Will a convincing platform sway an editor who is on the fence about your book?
Oh yeah, yeah. I'd say so. Absolutely. That's one of the things that people are looking for when they look at proposals, whether it's fiction or nonfiction. People are really looking to see what your connection is to the marketplace. How can you touch that market and sell books? What is your speaking, number of times you speak? I mean, people will tell me all the time, well, I'm a speaker. Well, how often do you speak? Oh, at least once a month. Well, how big are the groups? Oh, there are at least, you know, 30 or 40 people there. Well, good grief, you know, that's not much. You know, you're not really selling any books if you do that. If you're out, you know, four times a month and your audience is at least, you know, several hundred people, then that's a different kind of thing. You know, I was working with a guy that, you know, speaks about 300 times a year, you know, recently, and my goodness, he's on the road constantly doing that kind of thing. Large audiences, small audiences, that's a platform, comparatively.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Here's a really great question from Susan. What is the best way to build a pre-book platform, web, speaking, or both, or anything else?
I'd say all of the above. You want to use the Internet, and you want to be building that audience online with your e-zine. You know, there's a whole free ebook that I have too that people can get about building an e-list. Mm-hmm. If you go to www.terrylinks.com/E101, that'll take you to a 150-page free ebook about building a web list. And you want to build your list there. You want to speak. you know, get out to our audiences, large and small. If you're scared of speaking, join Toastmasters or some group like that. There's local Toastmasters clubs all over the country, and get over that fear of speaking. That's the greatest fear that most people have, is of public speaking. Nonprofits that would love to have you as a speaker if you're pitching yourself in those opportunities. So just get out there and do it. Whether it's and print magazines are constantly looking for good material. There's a lot of opportunity out there. You just need to grab onto it and go for it.
Right. There's opportunities online too, doing what we're doing right now, doing a teleseminar, and we're talking to each other on the telephone, and to us it just feels like a phone conversation, but everyone's listening in, and it's so easy to do that, because if you have one person asking questions and the other person giving the answers, that's just natural. You don't have to practice. You don't have to worry about if your hair is straight or if you have a new dress or whatever it is, because you're at home. And so teleseminars are a terrific way to start a following and to get used to talking about your topic with someone and getting your feet wet in that.
That's a great realm.
Mm-hmm. Lynn asked, how many networking communities and forums does one need to join? Can you get into too many?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can. You can spend all day on these online communities if you want to. So you have to be judicious about which ones you do join, and constantly be looking at them and seeing if they're, you know, if they're really a value of, or what are you getting out of them? Are you just giving all the time, or are you actually getting something from your interaction with those communities? So it's possible to be overcommitted on that stuff. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. It definitely can be a time waster. There are some shortcuts. And if anybody is interested in knowing how to post to Twitter using your email, send me an email, and I will definitely tell you how to do that. It's so easy to set it up, and it's such a great way to shortcut. Just put an email address in there and put your line for Twitter and hit send, and it goes out to Twitter and any place else that takes your Twitter post, like on Facebook or whatever. So my email address is rosiedow@rosiedow.com. Very hard to remember. And yes, another thing is join groups that benefit you on Facebook, like Facebook, where we're going to have a group for the people who come to the Spread the Word conference, and we're going to interact with each other there. And those aren't strangers. Those are going to be friends that we met and have some real input with. That is valuable. Just faceless names might not be quite so productive, although there is some value in that too.
Well, there's a lot of these things that are going on, like you're probably familiar with the ING groups that are out there, N-I-N-G groups that
yes,
are out there.
Yes, I've heard of that, yes.
I mean, that's amazing phenomena that's going on out there in the marketplace. And
mm-hmm.
There's a lot of opportunity to connect with a lot of different people. You just
right.
got to find the right groups that are connected to you and your niche and the topic that you have.
Right, to make it meaningful, not just collect a bunch of random names, but people that are actually interested in what you're doing, and you're interested in what they're doing too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Joe said, "Is what about branding? Is branding a part of platform?"
Oh yeah, absolutely. Branding is definitely a part of building your platform, building your brand. It all kind of goes together, so that you know, like a guy like Jeff Herring is known as the article guy, for example, that's
mm-hmm.
his brand. Or Mike Stewart's the internet audio guy. And those people have branded themselves in those particular categories for a good reason.
Mm-hmm. Right. When I think of articles, I immediately think of Jeff, because he has branded himself so well with that. Sue says, can a platform be regional and still be effective? What about regional platforms?
Oh, boy, I don't know. I guess it could be if you're maybe involved in regional print publications or regional magazines or regional newspapers. It could be. I don't see any reason to limit it to a region per se, unless you know, it's a craft that just happens in a certain area of the country, or a certain type of you know, pottery you collect or something like that. I don't know what it would be, but I wouldn't see why it would have to just stay regional necessarily.
If the editor had a choice between a regional platform and a national platform, would there be a lot of weight behind one or the other? You know, would be more.
Well, the traditional publishers every time will gravitate more toward the national platform. There are regional presses and regional publishers in different areas of the country. So, like here in the Southwest, you know, if you have an Arizona book, for example. You know, there are presses here in Arizona, small presses, that would be more interested in that than, you know, Random House or Simon & Schuster, for example.
Mm-hmm. Very good. I never even thought about the regional presses, but absolutely. If you have a regional press, they would definitely be interested in that.
Many ways to skin the cat. It's all a matter of how you say it. Yeah.
Finding that round peg for that round hole, not the square peg in the round hole kind of a deal.
That's it. It's a matter of persistence and perseverance as much as anything.
Mm-hmm. Pam asked a really good question. If a publisher has turned you down, can you develop your platform and then come back to them again? Can you revisit after a turndown?
Oh, yeah, I think so. You know, I mean, publishers and editors and tastes and likes change all the time. It depends on what they had for breakfast as much as anything, I think. Sometimes the way you feel, but it's not hardly that cut and dried, but it is very, very cyclical as far as what publishers like and what they don't like. So yeah, you can always circle back around, but when you do circle back around, I guess I'd encourage you to have a completely different kind of shape to a different title, different look, different points, because some of these editors have memories like elephants. I mean, they just remember all this stuff. And so you have to have something that's completely remolded and different when you go back to those publishers. But, yeah, publishers are constantly looking. I mean, I was talking to the publisher at a major publishing house today, and he was telling me that they're finding a lot of the proposals they get, even from agents at this house, they're like seen it before, so they're looking for something fresh.
Mm-hmm. Misty asked, how do you let the editor know that your platform is legitimate?
So how do you interpret that question, Rosie? I don't understand what they're saying there.
Well, I think what they're saying is you could be embellishing or putting apples and oranges together and trying to make something out of it. You know, that there isn't really a legitimate backing for what you're claiming, I guess. That's
yeah,
I think,
yeah, I guess the proof is in the pudding, I guess, is what I'd say, is if you're regularly communicating with those people, do you have, you know, hits on your website? You know, are you measuring the type of traffic and everything that you have? Those are all constant things that can be measured, and definitely you can show people. I don't think there's you can't really hide that stuff or make that up. It's got to be either there or not there.
Right. Is there a way to track sales so you can see which platform building ideas are really working?
Yeah, particularly if you sell the books yourself. You know, if you self-published, you'll definitely know whether your stuff is going or not. But if it's through a traditional publisher, it's a little harder to track. Even if you've gone through a publisher, if you're boxing up the books and selling them yourself, that's an indicator. You know, in a rough way, the Amazon numbers are an indicator of how consistently they're they're selling, whether you're, you know, way up in the millions or whether you're down in the, you know, several thousands, that's a pretty good indicator of how things are going for you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's talk a little bit about fiction. We've had a couple of questions about fiction, and see how we can apply this to fiction writers. What if your book is about a special topic in which you are an expert, but your novel is about something else? Will that matter? Should you always stick with the same topic in your fiction and your nonfiction?
Well, one of the things that fiction authors don't realize at all is the media doesn't really know what to do with them. You know, a journalist, for example, a newspaper journalist or a magazine journalist, it's all fine that you've written a book, but a novel on a certain topic. But what is the nonfiction hook for that book? What is it? What is it, the basis of it? So if it's, you know, if it's a domestic violence book with that sort of undercurrent that's there, are you an expert in the domestic violence area? In other words, can you speak to that nonfiction topic? So you have to figure out what the nonfiction area of your book, the undercurrent of the novel, is, and be prepared to be an expert in that area.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way you overcome the stigma about getting journalists to actually talk and write about your novel.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't get it.
I edited a book by a nurse who was an expert in diabetes, and she had special certification in diabetes, and she wrote a novel where the heroine had the very severe case of diabetes, and how she was an active person and how she dealt with her diabetes. It was kind of like an object lesson where you saw her getting into situations and how she handled it. And that kind of thing, but it was a very excellently written novel. It was interesting. The heroine was very likable, and so forth. And so she carried her expertise over into the fiction realm. I thought that was genius because she has such a platform built right into that, because she had articles and things out, you know, for diabetes too. Of course,
smart.
It had to be well written, but it was just, I thought it was just great. So that's just an example. Colleen asked, how can a historical fiction writer whose story is set in the distant past build a platform?
Well, I guess I'd look at what the superstructure theme of the historical novel is, not just the location and the time period, but what is the big picture theme of what happens in those character lives, and can you be an expert in that particular topic and speak about that.
Mm-hmm.
And historical fiction alone is huge. I mean, there's lots of people that love those time periods. So if you write about the Civil War, do you have some expertise in long-term reading, long-term knowledge base about that particular realm? You've obviously had to study a lot of details in order to be able to put together a proper historical novel. I'd use that when you go out and talk to people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Definitely.
Part of the key is to strategize and really not just do stuff haphazardly, but understand who that reader is, who that audience is, the magazine editors, the newspaper journalists, the people that you need to appeal to, and then figure out how to shape your message so that it's attractive to them.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just kind of go out with your message. You have to figure out how to shape that message so that it has the right kind of reaction.
Right. Frank asked, how much of my novel should I give away in a free ebook?
Oh, my. Some people have been very successful with that. I mean, Paul Coelho, is that how you say his name, the alchemist, gave away tons and tons of copies of his novel online before it took off in print. Now, he had a great novel as a base. This is the other thing you have to realize. You can give away, you know, lousy novel and not have any reaction at all. So it has to be a really good novel underneath in order for that to happen. But I don't know. I think I've seen people do things like serialize their novels, and there's all kinds of stuff that people are doing in order to get their work out there.
Mm-hmm.
Aren't you serializing yours?
Pardon me?
You're serializing yours, right?
Yes, I just finished. I just put the last episode up there about 2 days ago. I serialized a novel on a blog, and it was a novel that I had given up on sending to a publisher because it didn't fit the genre. There was one little part of it that didn't match their criteria. It wasn't that the novel was bad. Several people helped quite a while, but they finally said, oh, it just doesn't fit the criteria. And so I put it up there. The reaction has been tremendous. I've gotten such a blast out of it because I'm getting emails from people almost every day commenting on this part of the story, that part of the story. They're worried about what's going to happen, and it's just been great. I also did something else. I did something very risky. I took my Christie Award winner, and I put it in ebook form, and I gave it away. And it's still free on my website. If you go to rosiedow.com, you can click that link and download that 408-page book right there. And when I did that, I...
Buy a paper when you print it, I guess.
Might want to read it online or on the computer because you download it. But anyway, I gave it away on a homeschooling site because it is a story of the Scopes Evolution Trial, a historical novel, and it fit the homeschooling people's, you know, what they would like. And my Amazon rating shot up like it had never been before, and it stayed up there for about a week after I gave away the book. And I had a big boost in sales because of that. Because, well, it is 408 pages, and I guess by page 250, they're deciding they might want to read the paperback. But it was really great. It was so successful because then people, whenever you buy a book, there's a measure of risk involved because you're not sure if you're really going to like it unless you know somebody else who read it and they said you'll love this book or something like that. And when you have a chance to actually get the book and read through enough of it to know that you're going to like it, then the risk is gone, and, you know, the purchase price then becomes, it's a matter of fact, not a chance. And I think that has a lot to do with it, too. Anyway.
Absolutely. And when it comes to this whole book proposal topic that we've been talking about, I would encourage people to either go by Amazon and pick up, you know, book proposals that sell, even if they've written a novel, even if they think they've read all the nonfiction books out there about proposals, because mine is really different because it's written from the perspective of a book acquisitions editor, and that's what is really different about mine. Or you can get it online. You can buy it from me at bookproposals.ws is another way you can get it right away. And people are doing that all the time as well. And I've repeatedly found professional writers will come to me and they're like, yeah, I thought I'd read all the book proposal books, and people kept telling me about yours, and finally I decided to buy it, and it's great, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, people will do that all the time, and it's got a unique twist to it that people have used my book over and over successfully to get a literary agent or get an editor to be able to acquire their book, and they haven't been able to do it until they got all the right pieces together.
Mhm. Mhm. I think it's much better to actually be able to sit down with you and have you talk to the people listening about their proposal and how to position themselves in a better way. Or
I could do that because there are almost every one of these proposals that I get, I'd say, probably without exception, that I work on for the agency.
Mm-hmm.
My agency, I have to reposition those and tweak them in order to be able to get them in the right kind of format to be able to be ready to go out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very good. Well, Terry, I think that's the last question. And I just want to thank you so much for being with us. I want to say that these bonuses are going to be available until midnight tonight. And if you're coming in on the replay, you need to quickly take advantage of that because these things are great. And I just wanted to reiterate, too, that this conference is more than just a couple of days to sit and take notes. It is going to be entering you into a total network of help, of encouragement, and of input into your situation, your book, your information, your ministry, whatever it is that you have on your heart that you want to do to get the message out there. So don't miss out on this opportunity to take your career to the next level. And the hotel is charging the same for two people as for one person, and there's a discount if you bring register with two people together. So call up a buddy and get in on this before it passes away. So do you have any closing thoughts tonight, Terry?
Well, I just encourage people to proactively take steps to be building their platform and building their presence in the community. People need to start an e-zine, keep delivering good content to that. People need to continue to network with people in online groups and social media and just jump in with both feet and start doing it, and you'll be surprised how it'll build for you if you take the plunge.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. This is powerful stuff. Well, thanks again for being with us. It's been great, and thanks to everybody for attending. I'm looking forward to meeting you in Atlanta. And with that, I'm going to say good night.
I'll be there, too. Look forward to it, Rosie. Thank you so much.
Okay. I'm looking forward to it, too, Terry. Thank you very much.
Good night.
Good night.